Chapter 12. The twofold nature of man. We have been enabled to experience the support and guidance of the Hermetic philosophy, and in this way we have been permitted a foretaste of the morning of resurrection. We have seen and experienced that the whole Christ drama should be seen as referring to ourselves and that we are bound to walk that path. Through piety, a dialectical human being can be transfigured and merge into the other one. Piety, the high wisdom that results from it, and the grief of purification together form the guide on the path. After all this has been shown by the fifth book of Hermes Trismegistus, the text takes a different turn, beginning in the 15th verse. Here, Hermes suggests that Tat return to the starting point and make a summary, in order to focus more light on some aspects of the universal reality. Hermes pointed out that we will understand what he is about to say if we remember what we have heard. So, in summary of what we have discussed, we ask, what is the difference between natural religious and occult orientations and the orientation of the Gnosis and its school? The answer must be that the natural religious person assumes that after death, he will arrive in the heavenly spheres and will stay there forever. The person with occult tendencies believes that his I can be the basis of an unending evolution. This is an important point that you should take into account, and on which the Arch-Gnosis has again and again focused attention for thousands of years. That is why we read, each body is subject to change, but not all bodies are capable of dissolving. This means that not all bodies can merge into a higher order. Only some of them are able to do so. Not every creature is mortal. Not every creature is immortal. What is capable of dissolving is perishable. What is permanently unchangeable is eternal. What is ever being born is ever being destroyed again, but what has come into being once and for all is never lost, nor does it become something else. What does the Hermetic doctrine teach about these words? Among other things, it teaches that every form manifestation in the cosmos is subject to change. However, do not forget that there are two kinds of change, two kinds of development. There are entities whose form manifestations really do develop in an evolutionary sense and eventually attain perfection, who proceed from strength to strength and from glory to glory. There are also entities who are definitely subject to total perishability. Therefore, we have to accept the law that not every creature is mortal, nor is every creature immortal. Every creature can and must choose between life and death. We, in our state of being, still have that choice. We can choose between life, real life in a higher sense, and death. True life, however, will not fall to your lot just for the asking. There are states of development in which the course of true life has developed to such an extent that death can no longer strike. But there are also states in which the reverse is true, in which the descent into death has gone so far that life can no longer be grasped. The young Gnosis has always made a point of telling its pupils this and reminding them that the total emptying of the microcosms which, after death, arrive on the other side of the veil, is a fact. This is corroborated by some passages in the Arch-Gnosis. Dialectical man lives under biological conditions such that he may be carried off by death at any moment, in a fraction of a second. It is true, isn't it, that the mortal and fragile body can be destroyed at any moment? What is ever being born is ever being destroyed again. In contrast to this, there is the entirely different type of man, the lasting or heavenly type. The heavenly type is unchangeable and everlasting. What has come into being once and for all, in a higher sense of the word, is never lost, nor does it become something else. This makes clear how necessary it is to follow in Christ's footsteps, that is, to take the rosy cross on one's shoulders and walk the path, to cause the man of death to change into the man of life through transfiguration. This idea, which has been proclaimed by the Gnosis of all times, is somewhat alarming, For example, it becomes clear that billions of entities at present belong to death. On the other hand, this idea is very powerful, sublime, and imperative in character, if we bear in mind the foundations of the All manifestation, God, Cosmos, and Man. The All, the Cosmos, is God's form manifestation, so that through it God's creature might become like God. So God's creature is urged on by the command, "Be perfect, as your Father in heaven is perfect." Man was given a twofold soul to enable him to fulfill this great, magnificent, and divine vocation. The part which perceives with the senses is mortal. The part which responds to reason is immortal. The sensorial soul is the part which responds, for example, to heat and cold, to light and darkness, to all the laws and situations that occur in nature. If it is cold, it makes you put on more clothes. If it is hot, the opposite happens. Man's natural soul is the genuine Aeonian soul. As such, it participates in all the ups and downs of nature. It walks on all the paths of nature. It obeys nature in order to turn it to its best advantage, to enable the entity for whom it acts as mediator to pass through the cosmos towards God, and to ensure devotion to the one aim, God. The realization of the one aim is the task of the second soul, the soul that responds to reason. This rational soul is the one that possesses wisdom, the one that is seized by God, by the Spirit, the one that is connected with the Spirit. The Aeonian, or natural soul, should pass through the All under the guidance of the rational, or spirit soul. The spontaneity of the responding faculty of the Aeonian soul must be intelligently controlled by the spirit soul. God is the eternal one, the unchangeable one. The cosmos, on the other hand, is in a state of permanent movement and change according to its task. Consequently, the spirit soul, which is of God, is unchangeable and immortal. The natural soul, just like nature, is changeable and mortal, nullifying itself, always adapting and changing itself. When we speak of two types of man, and the Hermetic philosophy seeks to draw our attention to this fact, it is clear that the type of man who is subject to change and mortality possesses nothing but the natural soul and lives out of it entirely. The spirit soul has become latent in such a man. His existence is devoid of reason. In all respects, he bears the signature of what is irrational, changeable, and mortal. This type lives only a natural existence and is no longer able to realize God. However, the Bible teaches that man exists to glorify God. For instance, the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5 admonishes, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." The original text reads, in the proper Hermetic sense, "realize" instead of "glorify." The translators of the Bible did not grasp this point. Because of their religiosity, they could well understand that somebody could glorify God and show gratitude. They could not imagine that someone could realize God. That is why they translated it as "glorify." And we know what the churches mean by that. What has the creature who is subject to nature and to death to do now? Well, that is obvious. The latent spirit soul, the rational soul, must be awakened to life again, to activity. This soul was not able to die because it is immortal. It was led to general inactivity because the eye wanted to follow nothing but the natural soul, and so it degenerated existentially and condemned itself to immeasurable suffering. However, there is always a good side in every adversity. Everything that suffers gains experience. Experience is the fruit of suffering and frequently unbearable grief. This grief and suffering, which you know so very well, are the unmistakable characteristics of a fundamental immortality. Indeed, the animal creature, although it feels pain, does not feel grief. Pain is always a bodily experience and influences the inner condition only temporarily. Someone who suffers changes. Through pain, the brute may temporarily become a meek creature. Disease accompanied by pain makes a bustling, quick-tempered person yielding and quiet. However, grief is always related to the soul. Grief is the lamentation of the soul. Of course, it is not impossible for someone who suffers pain to experience grief at the same time, but someone who has nothing but pain returns to his previous nature as soon as the pain has disappeared. His nature will not deny itself. Real grief causes a deep wound and may in many cases have a purifying effect. That is why experiences of grief and the suffering caused by it are in man's present state of being undoubtedly the only method of forcing the natural soul to call to its sister, the spirit soul, to awaken it out of the grave of the living dead and transfer to it, in accordance with the plan of salvation, the control of life. In this way, the essence of immortality is once again enabled to demonstrate itself through transfiguration. If you awaken your spirit soul and give it control over your life, you need no longer ask yourself in doubt whether your existence is subject to death, for then you will possess the one true life. Piety and godliness bring the spirit soul to life again and lead it, through purification, into the trinity of the all-manifestation, God, cosmos, and true man. We hope and pray that you will soon enter this trinity. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Tranquility will be discovered only by him who has brought the rational soul, the spirit soul, to life again. In fact, you should see this statement as a hermetic axiom and be aware of what is said in the fifth hermetic book in this connection. The spirit soul is in God. Reason is in man. Reason is in the spirit soul. The spirit soul is not susceptible to suffering. The spirit soul is Pimanda, it is in God. Reason, the rational soul, is in man. The rational soul is in the spirit soul. In other words, the rational soul in man is at the same time connected with the spirit, with Pimanda, who is also in this man. Pimanda is beyond all suffering. So when, as you proceed on the path, you find your Pimanda, when you have awakened and liberated him, you will be raised together with him above all suffering. Now examine yourself thoroughly as to whether you still experience grief in the sense described. Do you still need experience through grief and its results? Then let it be so, for in that case you are not yet able to learn its lesson in any other way. It would, of course, be foolish and unfeeling to wish someone grief and suffering. However, if you have understood this hermetic wisdom, you can certainly be fervently grateful for the experience of grief because of the valuable lesson it can teach you. Your gratitude may then stem from the fact that the latent spirit soul, the voice of the Sphinx which lies buried in the sands of the desert, is still able to speak to you and shows some activity and, in the ultimate analysis, is still alive. Therefore, you should always be alert as to whether your experience causes you pain or grief. As you know, pain is an animal reaction and therefore spontaneous and without reason. Grief, however, is the reaction of the rational soul in bondage. How will you know whether you experience pain or grief? Well, you can always know from the results. Pain by itself causes resistance, opposition, passion, hatred, desire for retaliation. The clenched fist is the response to pain. It arouses the concentrated urge of self-maintenance of the I. Grief, on the other hand, awakens the desire for a liberating life. It is connected with love and especially with compassion. Through grief, we learn to speak those magnificent words, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Through grief, the willingness to forgive rises high in the human heart, and the heavenly rose garden opens wide its gates. It is this rose garden which the rational soul chooses as its dwelling place, and in which it may behold Pimanda. Such grief that consoles is what we wish you with all our hearts. Grief and physical pain may very well occur together, so physical pain may sometimes prove very useful to man. But do not just suffer your pain, always approach your physical difficulties from the side of the soul. Then the fourth aspect of the spiritual school will be able to do much for you. If you are elevated into the spirit soul, you will, at a given moment, go beyond all grief and no longer be susceptible to any suffering whatsoever. If you have understood all that has been discussed so far concerning the fifth book of Hermes, if all this has affected you in the right way, you will know from within the meaning of devotion, piety, and godliness, and you will possess true love of the one wisdom. Then you will be able to benefit from going deeper into the Hermetic philosophy and from considering the sixth book of Hermes Trismegistus.